All right, I'm talking louder now.
Watch that when you hear that. That's going to be a surprise, I'm telling you right now.
That'll wake you up. All right, we've been talking about Title VII, the distinction between discrimination and illegal discrimination as we wend our way through the discussion of legal considerations surrounding the selection of employees, which we're doing before the selection of employees, so you know what our limitations are, what we can and what we can't do. It's important, right? And let me again pound home the idea that there is a distinction between discrimination and illegal discrimination. I know everybody uses these two words, these two concepts, as being the same thing. But I want to make you, people who are educated, people who are in the know, and people who do not run with the flock of morons that went before you, you are going to stand out by understanding the distinction here. Illegal means not allowed under Title B11 of Civil Rights Act 1964. Illegal is defined as distinctions made on what? Discriminations based on choices based on, yes, protected groups, which at this point in time, as we just get inoculated into this discussion, race, creed, color, national origin, and my terminology, gender. Race, creed, color, national origin, or gender are the original covered characteristics of individuals. So, that means then race, creed, color, national origin, gender. Right? And if a distinction is being made based on those protected groups, these are your protected groups, right? The protected groups, then unless there's a reason for it, that would be an illegal discrimination. Let's go into this a little bit more before we go back to the nuts and bolts, which are more boring. What we're looking at here, then, as protected groups may not be considered as a requirement for the job or a limitation to getting the job unless those protected groups, PGs, protected groups, are what's known as BFOQs. So write this down, because now we're really going to distinguish you from a person who doesn't know what they're talking about. BFOQs. It's possible that you can use these protected groups for very limited selection situations. Very limited selection situations. And if you look over the idea of race, creed, color, national origin, and gender, you can think of two which could be a criteria for a job, a protected group as a criteria for a job. And in that case, those would be BFOQs. Bonafide, B-O-N-E-F-I-D-E, occupational qualification. Bonafide occupational qualification. That the protected group can be a BFOQ, a qualification for the job. Well, you tell me what the two might happen to be.
National origin.
B. because can you think of a situation where national origin would be appropriate for a particular job? And I'm going to tell you no. So don't bother. You might say a restaurant, for example. I have a Chinese restaurant, therefore I'm only going to hire Chinese people. And customer preference is not a criteria for hiring.
Gender.
Pardon?
Gender.
In what case would gender be an issue?
Like a woman's safe house or something like that. Like a woman's safe house or a man's safe house.
Or prisons or sometimes in hospital situations, et cetera, et cetera. So what we have here is a possibility of a gender BFOQ. How am I doing on the list? How many people are on? Did you number the list? Somebody number the list for me, would you? Usually when the list goes around, Barack Obama's on there, and sometimes Babe Ruth has shown up. All kinds of names appear on the list. It's kind of amusing. But then again, I have to count them and whatever. All right, and so what's the other one? Gender is a possibility, and what's the other one?
Race.
Never race. Ever. I once corrected a textbook an editor had sent to me that was in its fifth freaking edition. So it had been out for like 10, 12 years at least, and they had race under there as a BFOQ.
What about when you have like...
Unbelievable. For 12 years, they've been saying it wrong, and students that use that book were getting that wrong. What were we going to say?
What about when if you're being hired and there's like a court order that you have to have more women?
Well, that falls under affirmative action kind of situations, and it's, I mentioned to you, and it's a total exception. It's not really a BFOQ. It's like a waiving of the rules, sort of a modification of the rules. It's not a BFOQ per se. Are you on here?
Yeah.
What? Put yourself on there.
There's two of them. And
we still are neatly avoiding the one other protected group that still is a BFOQ, potentially.
Creed,
religion, right? The Baptists can hire Baptist ministers, etc. The Druids can hire Druid tree huggers or whatever they do. I'm not really sure what the Druids do. Well, how come there's so many of these things?
Two got started, I think one didn't
go off. Well, how many? One has 23 and the other has 24.
Let's go with the 24.
It doesn't make too much difference, but somebody is not on the 23 list, but it's on the 24 list.
I've only signed one.
You did?
I only signed one.
Can we try this over again with just one?
Why do we have two?
All right.
Why are you doing this? So that you get...
Why do we have two?
I don't know. Send it around again. That's the one that's going around. The short list here is not going around. So we're going to deposit this in the circular filing cabinet, wherever that might happen.
I guess we don't have one.
Okay. So creed means that you can hire an appropriate religiously oriented individual for that particular religious organization. For example, and I found this to be very interesting, I had a student once who took a job with Samaritan's Purse. Do you know where it is out there?
Yeah.
Okay. They're pretty cool. And he was same age as you guys, but what was his thing? His thing was, at this tender young age that you all are, repairing hydraulic electric plants. Pretty good, huh? That he had developed this skill at age 22. Anyway, when he finished up, he was sent by Samaritan's Purse, because they have all kinds of hospital installations around the world that they're affiliated with. So he went to some place in Africa to fix their hydraulic, water-driven electric generator type of deal, you know, water-powered generator. Something wrong with the internal mechanism. So he brought back pictures with him. When he came back 3 or 4 months later, he fixed the thing and had the pictures and showed it all to me. It was over my head within about the first minute and a half. But I smiled and nodded appropriately. And he had gotten this job because he knew what he was doing. And I said, well, do you have to have a religious affiliation? He said, yes, for this job, you'd have to be Christian. And I said, man, he had never said anything about it. He was not trying to convince me to do anything or think anything. He said, yes, it'd have to be a Christian to do it, because as a representative of Samaritan's Purse there, he had to be able to talk to the people that were coming to the hospital or that were on the campus of the hospital, et cetera, as he wandered around and fixed the generator. I thought that was kind of interesting, because it wasn't a direct ministerial situation, but he was sort of an outreach hydraulic engineer slash minister for what he was doing. And so that was pretty cool, I thought. And he brought me back this club that they make. It's this long, thin piece of wood with a ball on the end of it. He said it's for hitting animals. I'm saying, maybe. He said mostly they use their cell phones more than anything now. They don't have the clubs in their hands. They have their cell phones in their hands. But it was pretty interesting. My point is here that in terms of creed-related BFOQs, this is acceptable if it's a job that is in direct contact with a congregation. You would not be able to use a creed requirement for the tree trimmers or the person cutting the grass, for example, in a normal situation. But you would be, of course, for anybody contacting the congregation. So what we have here then is a gender consideration and a creed consideration, a religious consideration, that are the only two BFOQs that are acceptable. Now, students often ask me about national origin Chinese restaurants or Middle Eastern restaurants or whatever. Don't we have to have somebody who is Chinese in order to work in the restaurant, or Middle Eastern to work in the restaurant, or whatever?
Yeah. Don't sometimes, like, government require you to hire minorities for your certain situation?
We're again talking about affirmative action, and the word required is not a term they would use. But we'll get into that when we start talking about affirmative action, but that's a couple classes down the road here. Okay. So, as I mentioned to you before, national origin for restaurants, for example, Chinese, Middle Eastern, Turkish, French, right? Ooh la la. You know, you can't pull that off. It's not acceptable. So the argument was perhaps that a person has to be of that area in order to be able to speak the language. Often the chefs are French or Chinese or Turkish or whatever it might happen to be. But that doesn't stand up, because there's obviously Westerners who are able to speak those languages. So that doesn't work. Customer preference, therefore, for how people appear is not acceptable. Now it's time for you to ask the question about... No? Hooters? Is anybody going to ask about Hooters? People are always asking about Hooters, every semester, every class.
What about Hooters?
Oh, thank you. I figured you would. Hooters is in violation of the law when they hire attractive women, or women. I don't know if they're attractive or not, having never been there. But they hire women, and they put them in skimpy outfits. Is that true? And they have them as waitstaff. And what about the men that come in and say, I want to work here? What happens to them?
Put them in the kitchen.
Put them in the kitchen, correct. And that's called channeling, as I may have mentioned to you before, and it is illegal. There's no two ways about it. It's completely illegal. And I already said to you that I'm going to open my Aryan skinhead Nazi restaurant, and you saw the problem there. If they take Hooters, I should be able to hire a bunch of tall, white guys with long, blonde, sort of wavy blonde hair and all over 6 feet tall. Yeah.
Well, this might not be true, but I've heard in the past, like, private organizations can have the right to hire who they want. Is that not true, or...
Well, you can always hire who you want. It's a question of the ramifications that happen after who you hire, what you want. It depends on the nature of the private organization. If they have any kind of government tie in terms of money, then it's too late. And almost everyone, they pay taxes, for example. So they're already tied to the government, and therefore, right. What were you going to say?
Tax Town Tavern here in town sort of does the same thing.
Who is it?
Town Tavern.
Okay.
Right over by where Blockbuster used to do. They only have female waitresses and all, like, guys in the kitchen. Is that a violation of the law?
Yeah.
Because they're still hiring both men and women.
Channeling. That's what people would say, too, when they hired women to make them secretaries. And all they did was, you know, run the typing machines back in the day. And all the men became the executives. Right. So it's channeling and it's illegal. So they'll get their asses sued eventually. Is it a small company or a big company?
It's a little local bar.
Oh, God.
I mean, they have
if they have more than 15 employees, they're ruined.
Well, then how do you
hmm?
What? But how do they prove that?
What do you mean, how do they
prove it? Like, what if they just say we didn't have any men apply for the waiter job that were qualified?
They're not going to, that's not the supporting information. The supporting information is how many people in the relevant labor market by gender could do that job. And they would take a look at all the students, say any one of the guy students here could probably wait on tables, and any one of the women could wait on tables. And yet you're taking only women, which is clearly illegal discrimination. They're screwed if they get caught.
So how does Hooters stay in business if they
Hooters stays in business because they consider it to be advertising, in my opinion. When they apply for a permit to establish a Hooters restaurant, do you think they file it under the idea of sex restaurant? Do they put it on the thing? What do they put? Family restaurant. That's what they put. How they get away with that is beyond me. And then they hire the wait staff that they think the customers want to see. But this was all litigated, as I mentioned, under the idea of that guy became a flight attendant. He wanted, and the airlines argued, well, the business people and whatnot want to see attractive young women swishing up and down the aisles, delivering coffee and crappy dinners, right? So Rudy Diaz applies back in 1972, and they said, hey, he can do it. You're in the business of moving people from place to place, not in the business of providing entertainment for the male customers. The same is true for restaurants. You're here to serve food. You're not here to provide entertainment for male customers. And I don't care what they say. That's the law. And they may be able to bend it some, but not really.
I thought they hired Hooters waitresses as, like, models, technically. And so they were allowed to, like, discriminate based on, like,
no, they're not. They may try that, but any kind of investigation shows that they're not doing that much modeling since they're all wearing, don't they all wear the same outfit?
Mm-hmm.
Well, since they're all wearing the same outfit, you ever been to a fashion show in Paris? It would be really boring, trust me when I tell you. It would be really boring if every model that came out was wearing exactly the same outfit. It would be interesting, but it would be boring.
But isn't it just them promoting the, or like modeling the Hooters brand? You can buy all that kind of stuff. It would be that modeling.
They're not a modeling agency. They're a restaurant. That's what it's going to come down to. What is your primary business? And is it a BFOQ that you happen to be a woman in this situation? Like we mentioned before, hospitals and the like, we see situations where women might be more appropriate for certain situations. And
what about strip clubs?
In that situation, they would argue that that's why we're in business. We're in business because, and in that case, it becomes a BFOQ, gender BFOQ. And I'm sort of surprised that it works. But what they've done is set off right at the bat to say, we're going to be a strip club, is it just a strip club, where the women take off most of their, if not all of their clothing, and the guys get really excited more so as they drink more and more beer, and they go out in the parking lot and beat the shit out of each other, and it's all in all a really good time for everybody. What the hell. So that might be a business model, but in general, I don't, whatever. I mean, they let it go because that's the nature of these things. But when you claim to be a restaurant, particularly filing a license for a family restaurant, and then you try to bend this into a situation where, is it always young ladies that work in Hooters? So there's age discrimination here, too. So we have both age discrimination and gender discrimination here, because they probably wouldn't hire wait staff that was over 40, because everybody knows that women, except for my wife, of course, over 40 are not attractive. Yeah?
And back in, I think, like 2009, there was a guy who sued Hooters for like a discrimination lawsuit, and they argued that...
Illegal discrimination lawsuit.
Yeah, and they argued that they were pretending under the FOQ.
Well, they got their heads up their elbows.
Well, peddling,
what do they know about these things? I mean, they're just wrong. And there could, with enough dollars being passed to enough politicians, might be able to squeak it through. But it would cost a lot. You'd have to bribe a hell of a lot of people to make this happen. Maybe to them it's worth it. But at this point, it seems that they're just using it as advertising. Well, we got sued again because of our beautiful women and their skimpy outfits, etc.
What about companies that use like Red Bull, and I know some beer companies, like they send, you know, always women to like bars or whatnot to hand out free products and like advertise. Is that illegal?
Don't they ever send men out to do it?
I've never seen them have
really.
Like
with beer companies.
So you said something about 15. Is that like a
15
number?
Or more is covered under Title VII. I think they would have the same problem. If anybody sued, they'd have problems proving that this was a legitimate BFOQ for their company. They're in the business of selling water with caffeine in it, and that's basically their business. And, by the way, the research shows that those drinks do absolutely nothing more for you than does coffee, by the way. You're just all idiots for paying $3 for a shot of whatever it is. Four-hour energy crap. You know what it is? It's two cups of coffee with a bunch of other crap, and the other crap doesn't do anything. Research shows. I'm not making this up. So I think they would be in a shaky situation if they got nailed, if they were pushed. But it would be worthwhile looking. Maybe I'll try and remember to look it up.
Most companies just do what they want until somebody sues them.
Most companies do what they're too stupid not to do. They just go ahead and do what they think they should. It's my business, and I should be able to do what I want. Why is the government always up in my face telling me what I should be doing? I'm telling you, the government should get out of my face. Except when I get a tax rebate, except when I need the army to protect me, except when I need police, except when I need the fire department, except when I need a new road, except when I want to get a small business administration loan, except just keep filling in the accepts, right? In other words, just give me things, but don't tell me what to do. It's a great business model, right? People are stupid, what can you say? All right, so that's really what it comes down to. If you see what looks to be discrimination, illegal discrimination, it probably is. But somehow they're either sucking it up and using it for publicity, or they haven't been called on it yet, or whatever. It's remarkable. Anyway, so what we're looking at here then is this discrimination. In the discussion so far has been simply this one-to-one, write this down, okay, one-to-one intentional protected group discrimination, which is not BFOQ, not an occupational qualification. In other words, it's not job-related. It has a name, disparate treatment. I may have told you already. Adverse or disparate treatment means the same thing. You'll see it used differently in different jurisdictions. Disparate, P-A-R-A-T-E, D-I-S-P-A-R-A-T-E, or adverse, as in against treatment. That's that discrimination, which is intentional and one-to-one. I'm not hiring you because you're a Seventh-day Adventist, and I don't want you in my organization. Take a hike. That would be intentional one-to-one illegal discrimination, unless it happens to be a BFOQ for a religious basis. It's a Catholic organization or whatever. You get my point. D-I-S-P-A-R-A-T-E. P-A-R-A-T-E. Barrett. Sounds like it should be disparate, like your parent, you've been fired, disparate. But it's not. All right. And this was the original understanding of what illegal discrimination was. It was obvious. Everybody knew that's what it was, and it was very straightforward. People were not getting hired. In large part, this legislation was aimed at a race consideration. People were not being hired because they were African American or Hispanic, mostly African American back in the 60s. And obviously, since there's no BFOQ for race, then that wouldn't be applicable. And it would be therefore illegal in an organization that had 15 or more employees. Let's talk about the foundation of this for a moment. The title, the Civil Rights Act of 64, also sets up the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. So put down, all this is under the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, which hears complaints. EEOC, Equal Employment Opportunity Commission.
The disparate treatment under that?
Yes. All of this, as I've talked to you so far, is under Title VII, and the terms that have been developed have come out of the various court cases and interpretations. So, the Civil Rights Act of 64 sets up the EEOC and puts in place the original five protected groups. I want to think about how far to go with this. And that's how it read in 1964. I'll cap it right at that point at the moment. In general, what this meant is that a complaint against a company is going to be investigated by the EEOC, and they're going to look to see whether you have illegally discriminated against a protected group, which is redundant, obviously, because it would have to be a protected group to be illegal. If you have discriminated against a protected group and created, therefore, an illegal hiring practice. They're going to send out an investigator. They're going to talk to you. They're going to look at paperwork. And what they're going to do then is to try to alleviate the problem. There's not going to be any money involved yet. What they're going to try and do is to come up with a change plan for your company to make a change for being in compliance with Title VII. Okay, pretty straightforward.
Title
VII, always seven. Nine, I don't really know much about. Something to do with sports or something, whatever. It's all under Title. It's all under the Civil Rights Act. But we're talking employment because it's HR related. All right, I'm going to talk to you some more today, but I need to stop there on that discussion because if I go down farther, it'll go into court cases and how they're argued, and I don't want to do that today. So instead, I'm going to jump to the other side of the coin to talk to you about the new form of illegal discrimination that was developed in, I want to say it was developed in the early 70s. 1970s, as it wended its way through the courts and ended up at the Supreme Court. And that case was known as Griggs versus Duke Power. Yes, our beloved Duke Power. Griggs versus Duke Power. This is the most important landmark case in the concept of discrimination and illegal discrimination. So this is a major case. It's really the only reason I mention it to you because it's so important. I won't go through a lot of cases with you guys. And there's, for everything I tell you, there's at least 10 or 15 cases, but I don't need you to know all that stuff. What I need you to know, though, is the general principles, and Griggs versus Duke Power lays out the rationale behind the new form of illegal discrimination, which is called adverse impact, I-M-P-A-C-T, adverse impact, negative impact. Let me tell you how that works. Adverse impact. If a company, do we have this written down? If a company says, I'm only going to hire people for this job that can bench press 140 pounds, what's going to happen?
A lot of men.
Yeah. And you're going to rule out a lot of women. Most women, as I say, except for the occasional Brunhilde, can't bench press 140 pounds. It's a fair amount of weight, and it would have what's known as adverse impact against women. It's indirect, and it's group-oriented. And it's often unintentional. So it's somewhat different than the idea of adverse treatment. Now, why is this important? Dr. Fox, you just given us so much crap. Why it's important? I'll tell you why it's important. Because everybody understands adverse treatment. You don't look at somebody and say, I'm not hiring you because you're Hispanic. That's obvious. I don't need to spend any time talking about that. As long as you understand the BFOQs and a few other odds and ends, you're cool. But adverse impact or disparate impact, when it's indirect, becomes a major issue because people don't understand. And there's all kinds of situations where this misunderstanding can cause problems. I'll take a shortcut into one of those. An interesting case where the secretaries at the women working in a garage, I can't remember what type of agency it was. I think it might have been a General Motors, but I don't want to slander General Motors. Were upset and filed a complaint for adverse impact because all the men out in the workshop had pictures of beautiful women holding long wrenches and wearing skimpy bikinis and all that stuff that you would see with a Mac tool calendar, right, et cetera. That was seen as illegal adverse impact because it hurts the women. The women are feeling discriminated against and are feeling nervous and anxious about this kind of pressure.
Yeah. It's just this kind of practice right here that I wish dueling laws were still in effect. And, you know, sabers, single shot pistols.
Dueling laws?
Yeah, like if you had a problem with somebody, you just went out of the field, one of them didn't want back. I hate this little litigious, bickering back and forth.
It depends. I explain this sometimes to people as if a guy walked into his supervisor's office, and also a guy, and on the wall of your supervisor's office was a picture of his friend Bruce wearing black leather and carrying a whip. You might feel a little bit scared about what you had to do in order to get promoted at the organization. Do you see my point?
They call that a hostile work environment.
Pardon? Hostile environment, it's either, under sexual harassment, which we have a whole section on yet to go. But do you see my point, how a guy might feel that he's under pressure to conform with what the supervisor wants if the supervisor clearly is into leather?
I'd leave them alone. That's what I think everybody should do, is leave everybody the hell alone. That's just not what happens.
Well, supervisors per se can't leave people alone. Their job is to guide people, coach people into doing the job well. So now, if the supervisor comes out and says to you, hey, big fella, here's what you're doing wrong, and you could probably get ahead in the organization, and there's a long pause, you might feel a little bit harassed by the indicators of success called to your attention by his office photographs. Maybe not. Maybe you're not that way at all, a Jack Reacher kind of guy, and you'd be fine. But a lot of people aren't. A lot of people, particularly women, would feel upset by seeing a supervisor with naked women or a mechanic with naked women or semi-naked women with a torque wrench in front of them.
Yeah.
whatever. So what we're looking at here now is to recognize that the EEOC has in place the idea of creating a place where citizens of the country can work in a non-threatened way. A lot of people are less aggressive and less interested in fisticuffs, so to speak, or sword fights, or whatever you might happen to be, maces, AK-47s at 100 feet. They're not a very accurate weapon, I was just reading.
What, AKs?
But they can get really dirty.
They can get
fire.
Then they still work. You can
yeah.
How do you know all this?
I don't know.
Are you working? You can take an AK-47, bury it in the dirt. You tell me if this is not true. I've heard that this is true. Bury it in the dirt, wait for a long time until all the wood parts are rotted away, dig it up out of the ground, load it up, and it'll fire.
I don't know about that, but I know you can throw it in the mud, pick it up, and still rely on it to shoot close.
Yeah. And why did they do that? Because the Russian troops were not too smart. And they wanted, when they created the lever for fire on that, you know, off, safety. In our case, what would be the natural way to create that? You're going to single shot and then full auto. What would be the way? Off, single shot, full auto, right? That would be the way that we would think linearly of setting this up, right? Makes sense. You want a single shot, you push to one. You want full auto, you drop it all the way. But that's not the way the AK is. The AK is just the opposite. Why? Because they didn't trust the troops not to panic. They pick up the weapon, they slam the lever down because they're in a panic state, and when they hit it all the way down, they get single shot so that they can't, in a panic state, fire off their entire clip in 1 second. So they have to actually make a distinction. I want full auto, bring it back up one, and then they can hit full auto. But in a panic situation, what was happening is they were emptying the clip. Kind of interesting, isn't it?
I mean, can you blame the Russians, though? Cause, like, in World
no,
War II,
they can't play Ru- the
in
design.
World War II, they give, like, one Russian a rifle and they give the other one a set of bullets. So.
Spit bullets, right? So anyway, I think it's really interesting. I was just reading about that. The linear versus the actual human response to a weapon. And they don't want them to fire full auto when they're in a state of panic because they just pull the trigger and run. And run out of ammo immediately. Right. Kind of cool. Anyway, where was I on this thing? Something about shooting and response. A lot of people don't want to get into that. What they want is a workplace that encourages them to work. Now, the EEOC also, I might add, has put these in place in order to create the most efficient and effective workplace. If people are upset, if people are angry, if people think, oh, the boss can do whatever they want with me, then they're not going to be fully efficient. So from the point of view of your actual business, you would want that also. If all employment decisions were who could beat the shit out of somebody else, right, the company would probably not be that successful. What they would have is a bunch of testosterone-driven managers and a lot of subservient employees, maybe.
Couldn't the workers that had the pictures of the women with wrenches argue that it was increasing their work ability and it was making them work harder?
Unless they were sitting there staring at them all day.
Right. I had a friend of mine who was fired because he spent his whole day on the job working construction with me, filling his pipe. He's walking around filling his pipe. He looked like he was thinking about the job, but he was really just filling his pipe. He wasted like about 6 hours a day filling his damn pipe until finally the foreman canned him. What was your question?
They can argue that the pictures of the women holding their wrenches would increase their work capability.
Yeah, well, that may be, but it's not going to happen. It's not going to be seen that way. So, what we have here then is a situation where both, in my opinion, both the employees and management gain by equal employment opportunity strictures. Why? Because it creates a healthier work environment. Let's say, for example, you were asked what is the most successful, let's just go by examples. No theory here. We're just going by examples. What's the most successful organization in the state of North Carolina? Say it.
Yeah.
SaaS. Always in the top five places to work, always generating huge profits, always with great PR, always with low turnover, always with a huge pool of people that want to work there. How do the employees interact there with management, et cetera? Do you know?
I remember watching a video.
Pardon?
I remember watching a video, and it was just the owners really into not letting them work that many hours.
Night. Yeah. No, good night. Yeah. You know, get night with sneaky, night with Nikes, and then good night with Sash. Yes, it's a very open, very conversant, very supportive environment. And do they get good work out of these people? You straight shooting Fig Newton. They sure do. They get lots of good work out of that.
How is Berkshire Hathaway to suggest?
Well, you're working in an area that is financially driven. And you're talking here about financial decisions, which are substantially different than manufacturing situations or in situations where software is being written or whatever. And you could argue that Berkshire Hathaway is just following a model, the model being that they investigate a company that's down on its prices. The common shares are running lower than they should be based on their earnings, or their earnings are down based on a particular situation. Think of a number of things the number of companies they've absorbed, and they have a checklist, and they look at a company and they put checks in place. Is it a good product? Check. Is it a well-run plant? Check. Is it or no check? Check or no check. Do they have a potential future for selling this stuff? Check or no check. Are they in a competitive environment? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This long checklist. And by the time it gets done, they can make a fairly accurate decision about whether they should acquire this company. Oakwood Homes, for example. Do any of you remember Oakwood Homes? It was a mobile home manufacturer here in North Carolina. And they were in extremely, I did a fair amount of consulting work for them. They were in a situation where there's a huge amount of pressure. They had no market representation. In other words, the market didn't see Oakwood as anything in particular, just another box that you could live in, right? I kept saying, you've got to stress something, stress price, stress quality, stress exclusivity, whatever you want to, you've got to stress something, when they never did. So here they had the manufacturing facilities, a good product, a good design, but it wasn't selling. So all the checks were in place, because all that had to be done was to be either subsumed into another couple of these companies or just change their marketing plan. So they got bought by Berkshire, for example, and I think they were merged together with two or three other home manufacturers and have done really well. So, but that's not a situation where there's a lot of there's not a lot of manager push against subservience because it's not a manufacturing environment. It's more of an intellectual environment. And when you hire people, you're hiring them at upper levels. You know, even researchers are fairly high level there, in my opinion. So it's a different type of situation. Okay, so what we have here then is this understanding that Griggs versus Duke Power brought into play this idea of indirect, unintentional, protected group discrimination. And I'll talk to you a lot more about this when we get back together on next Tuesday. It's in the hiring process or, any decision-making process about a resource being allocated.
So if I ask you, what is the adverse impact of
I'd say it's unintentional, group-based illegal discrimination,